donations or through Anchor FM with different tiers like the 99 cents per month, $3.99, and $9.99. Thank you very much.
Hello.
This is Pam Electric Ghost. Welcome to the program. We are recording.
Hi.
Hi. So, Leanne, Shay, right?
Yeah. Oh, Shay. Yep, that's me.
So yes, this is the Pam Electric Ghost podcast where we interview actors, artists, musicians. We primarily tend to talk to musicians because I'm a musician myself.
Great.
Do talk to actors. We actually have talked to Jess Davis from New York City.
Yes, I listened to that episode, actually.
So we want to continue to talk to other types of creative folks.
Cool.
So we welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. I'm super psyched to be here.
It's great because you're from Boston. I live in New Hampshire.
Nice. What part of New Hampshire are you in?
Concord.
Oh, yeah.
I was actually born in Springfield, Mass, and I lived in the 1970s. I lived in Stoughton, Mass. My father worked in Boston as an insurance guy. So, I'm familiar with that area. I spent a lot of time in Boston doing work and stuff. But, it's cool to see. I know that are you right now you're in
LA,
right?
Yeah. So I grew up in Boston and Winchester and so mostly not Boston proper, but Somerville and Winchester. And I moved out. I went to UMass Amherst. Whoop, whoop.
In Springfield.
I know Springfield pretty well. And I've been out in LA for a little over 8 years now working.
Yeah, I've seen that you've actually worked in Canada, Australia, and the UK.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, it's been pretty amazing. I love to travel. And then whenever I get to work and travel at the same time, it's just like.
Yo, did I lose you? I think I just lost you. Oh, no. Yeah.
Oh,
you
okay.
Came back. Yeah, I lost you.
Weird.
Yeah, make sure your Bluetooth isn't on. So maybe your Bluetooth headphone might try to turn on or something.
Okay.
What happened. But we still
got
it.
Okay, great.
Well, I actually have some questions I didn't send you, but I kind of modified the questions I asked musicians to kind of go through that background. But I did notice that you have done film, television, and theater. So that's really interesting. And it's different than when we talk to musicians. They have a different type of resume. But I wanted to know, like, when we talk to musicians, you guys said, well, when did you first get into music? So I'll ask, like, when did you first get into acting? Like, at what age did you decide you wanted to do that? Was it, like, when you were younger, or do you come into it later in life?
Kind of a little bit of a mix. So I grew up as a dancer, primarily ballet, tap, jazz, the classic. And I always thought that I was going to be a dancer, and I still do love dancing till this day, really. But I started acting at first, probably when I was in third or fourth grade. And at the time, my dance schedule was so hectic. I did like one play and was like, oh, that was fun. And, you know, always thinking about it, but always being at dance too much to really pursue it. And when it came time to apply to college, that was when I really made the decision of, hey, I think that acting is something that I want to pursue a little bit more than dance. Because, you know, at the time I was thinking, I can be an actor and also a dancer and, kind of do both, especially in theater. It's like, it's kind of very handy to be able to move your body well. And so I started thinking about that and applying to schools for that. But at the time, I was also really interested in medicine. So I actually started college as a pre-med student while still taking theater classes, and somewhere around my sophomore year of college. So probably when I was about 19, I realized, you know what, I can still help people without being a doctor. So I decided to leave pre-med behind and go full force into theater. And so I went ahead and I did that and fully majored in theater and it's like had the best time at school. And then also right when I graduated, I worked for a little while with a touring kids show and a few different theaters in Boston. And the touring show was how I performed a lot of the places I performed to start. And then after I did that, I decided that I really loved movies and really wanted to start learning about film and getting into film. And I thought if I'm going to do it, there's one place to do it, and that's Hollywood. So I moved out here to LA and I've been working in film ever since. Started mainly as an actor and just through kind of curiosity and also necessity, I've learned a few other tricks of the film industry as well. Like I do a bit of screenwriting now. I also produce. I've kind of done, quite a lot of jobs on a film set. And, you know, as far as crew, I've PA'd, I've assisted, have a little experience in lighting, like kind of a little bit of everything to really learn how the machine works. But acting is still my number one love and what I'm here to do. And the other things like producing and writing just enable me to.
Oh, you dropped it again.
I think it's when my phone goes on sleep mode, you know, the screen goes dark.
Maybe try to make sure
sorry, I was talking, didn't realize. Kind of learned a little bit of all sides of the film industry by moving here to LA and working with you know, friends and people that I had started out with as colleagues, and they've become dear friends that, you know, we've kind of come up together and started making movies together. And I, you know, really just have continued that life. And also recently, you know, thanks to the pandemic, have also gotten a little bit into podcasting.
That's kind of my zone. Where I am. But it's interesting. The parallels between like musicians and actors is very interesting, because a lot of musicians, they'll come into something, you know, then they'll become a producer, or they'll become a music director, or they'll become a recording engineer, or, you know, they tend to get into all aspects of the art that you're in.
Yeah, I can totally relate with that. Also, I know a little bit about it. Both my dad and my boyfriend are musicians, so I'm like kind of understand that world, even though I cannot play anything to save my life. I get how some of it works.
But as an actor, have you ever had to like sing?
Yes.
I mean, have you done
singing I've part done of your a role? Handful of musicals, not a ton. I would say the way I kind of describe it is like I'm an okay singer, like I can get by, but and do pretty well. And I think people that don't really sing are like, oh wow, you can sing. But people that are like Broadway singers are like, So you know, I can sing okay, but it's definitely not my strongest suit, even though I love it. Like I would go to a karaoke night any day of the week. It's one of my favorite things.
There's other things, kind of like the capabilities of actors. You know, your comedians can do very serious work. You know, a lot of actors I've run into are like frustrated musicians and want to be like, you know, Keith Richards, but they can't, you know. but you know, they want to. So things like the ability to, I think, kind of play other roles is, you know, like a David Bowie aspect. You know, one of the things that I love about Bowie.
What a hero. He's like one of my all-time favorite artists.
Yeah, just the idea that he decided that you should present yourself in more than just your blue jeans and actually create a character.
Yeah,
stagecraft. You know, that. A lot of musicians, we kind of look to that, you know, we look at what you actors do. And when we present ourselves, we try to come up with stagecraft. We try to come up with like the other me, the idea that when you're a musician or you're trying to be a talent, that you look to like acting and you look to that to try to, you know, do something when you're doing your show that you actually carry a show more than just your music.
Yeah. And I can agree with that. And then just like the way that I think it's like, you know, you're on a stage, people came to see you. Why not put on a show in every aspect of the word?
Yeah. So it's interesting. I was just looking at your resume. Where you have your SAG and your AFTRA designation. And one of the first things you have on here is a Lady Dynamite. You were, and so this, can you talk about
what that was about? So Lady Dynamite was a Netflix show that was on for two seasons. Unfortunately, it got canceled after two seasons, but it was the star and creator was a comedian named Maria Bamford, and she was just the kindest and so amazing. And I've also have friends that have worked with her in the stand-up world as well. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I was in an episode of that. I was actually hired for my yo-yo trick skills, which I learned from a show that I did for kids a few years ago. I used to do this show where I would go around to schools and do a one-woman show and talking to kids about believing in themselves and doing their best. And I would be like a living cartoon character doing yo-yo tricks and magic to keep them entertained and keep them, you know, keep their attention while I was teaching the concepts. And so I always had it on my resume, and she really wanted, Maria, the creator of the show, really wanted someone to do yo-yo tricks in this big scene. And it's this crazy scene where it's her wedding and it's in this crazy function hall, and she has like all kinds of acrobats and people doing bike tricks, BMX tricks on a half pipe behind the altar. And there were, you know, people on stilts and pogo sticks, and then me doing yo-yo tricks, leading her down the aisle as she was going to get married.
Oh, wow. So it was like one continuous shot with all these people.
It was huge. Yeah. So it was huge. It was probably, I actually had a couple of friends that worked on the show, and they said it was one of the biggest days of production that they ever had, just because so many people were involved. And so it was a really, really cool experience to not only be brought there for that absolutely weird random skill that I have, but then to also be a part of such a big day with other people that were really in the same boat as me, you know, that were there because they had a very specific skill that they were very, very good at. Mm-hmm. For this comedy wedding, for the show. So it was a really great time, really great set to be on. Unfortunately, a bit of my yo-yo tricks was cut out of the final edit of the episode, but till this day, I always look back on that fondly, because it was just such a fun day on set and such a fun group of people to work with. And also remember, you know, I didn't talk at length with the creator and the star of the show, but in the brief interaction I had with her, I mean, she was so kind and so welcoming to everybody on that set. And it was just so lovely to see, and just kind of the way that I like to operate when I work. And it was just so nice to see that in someone that has come so far and had so much success on their own.
So that's interesting. You know, you talked about how you get picked for a specific skill set, for a role. But it's interesting. I was looking at you. You have internet and film and theater. So I'm kind of going to jump to a film in a woman's place. Can you talk about?
Yeah, sure. That was actually something that I created on my own. I created it right after the 2016 election, actually, and kind of a response to that. So I wrote it and created it and played the, you know, it's only a short film, but I was the only actor in it. And so I worked with my boyfriend, who's also my creative partner. He's a screenwriter and a director. And so I was like, hey, I have this idea. I want to do this. Will you help me? And he was totally down. And so he shot the short for me, and we edited it. And actually, I reached out to a few news outlets just to say, like, hey, I made this thing. It was also kind of a call to action for, you know, people in response to the election, like places that people could go to donate to communities that I thought and still think needed the help, communities like, you know, immigrants crossing the border, communities like women that were in need of healthcare, and all of those different kinds of organizations. And the Huffington Post actually was like, yes, great. Yeah, we'll help you release it. Do you want to do an interview? And so I spoke with one of their writers and they released it with this lovely article kind of about the piece and a little bit about the aftermath of the 2016 election. And so that was, thank you for asking about that. That was actually,
well, how important was the Huffington Post in helping you push that? Did they really help?
They came into the process, it was already completed. And I was just kind of looking for a way to get it out to more people than just, you know, my immediate network. Yeah.
That's a great, great push. A big platform like them. It seemed like that's a good place to be able to get to. Oh, you're off again.
I'm here.
Yeah, but I was saying that's a great, like, if, as a musician, like, if we can get in the role and
stuff. Oh, God,
like, yeah. That's like core, you know, it's like being a Huffington Post, that's like a core. Like
and at the time they had an outlet called Outspeak TV, which really kind of fit in with the mission of what I was trying to accomplish with the short. And so I just reached out to somebody there and got, you know, they luckily were into the idea and willing to help promote it. And so it was really cool at the time and still to be like, oh yeah, well that worked, because, you know, sometimes as a creative, you know, especially in creating your own work, I think you do wonder, like, okay, where's it gonna go? And that's something that I think a lot of people, and I'm sure it's similar with music, it's like, okay, well, I could just release it on, you know, my Facebook to my friends or YouTube or something, but it would be really great if someone, there was a bigger audience that I could get this to. And so for that to work out in that way, I was just like, felt so thankful at the time and so happy to have, you know, created that relationship with the people there.
Yeah, that's awesome that you were able to do that. And then I'm going to jump around again to more of a bigger name, like, well, for people who are into, like, you know, the comic industry, that you actually did, like, an internet.
Yes. Yeah. That was something. I also am a bit of a comic book geek. So that was something a friend had seen an audition posting for, and they sent it to me. They were like, this is something that you would be so into. And I was like, you're right, I am super into it. So I actually submitted my headshot and resume for the audition, and I submitted for a different character than the one I wound up playing. And I remember going in for it and having a great time, and the creator of that show and the producers of that show were just like so kind and so wonderful to work with. And so they didn't wind up casting me in the role that I had auditioned for, but they wound up casting me in another role. And I was just still so thrilled to be a part of the show, because I'm just like a huge Batman fan.
Did that happen a lot? Like, when you're acting, if you go for something and then the director says, no, I think you fit better here.
It happens on occasion, for sure. It's definitely not out of the question. And it's also not out of the question for you to go in for one project and for, you know, something to happen like, hey, you're not right for this project. But then a year down the line, hear from that same person and say, hey, I remember you. You came in and auditioned for this. And I'd really love for you to come in and audition for this new thing that we're doing. So, yeah, it is. It's funny that every opportunity kind of leads to another opportunity. I think, you know, the mindset, if, you know, you're going to, if you're an accountant, for example, and you go to a job interview and you don't get that job, it's like, oh, okay, you know, probably, but maybe down the line they'll call me, but probably not. Whereas as an actor, it's like, if you go for the audition. And you, I think if you are kind and good to work with and you put your best work out there, there's a high possibility that even if you aren't right for that project or that role, that you could be potentially called back for something in the future. I had an actor friend that she said, I think this is the longest one I can think of, but she had an audition with a casting director, and then 5 years later, that casting director had remembered her and called her back for a specific role that was basically her, like as a human being. So, you know, it's like, it can happen. Yeah.
Yeah. It seems kind of like what happens with studio musicians, you know, they get a reputation and then they picked up by all these different artists, and they are able to work on multiple projects, and they end up being kind of like an actor in a way, in that their skill set in their particular instrument or capability gets known in the industry, and then different producers pull them, you know, for different projects, and you get pulled because you can do this kind of bass line, or you just type of piano line, or you're known for this kind of guitar, mm-hmm. and then you get pulled in, you know, just because they know you can do that. So you go on all these different projects. You never really know what you're going to get pulled into.
Right. Yeah. That's the kind of, same kind of mentality. All you can do is like show up and do the work and do a good job. And then hopefully, you know, that begets more work in the future.
Yeah. So I'm always trying to find the parallels between different types of things, but I'm going to kind of go into your theater work. Cause like all actors or all musicians kind of start with like the basics. You know, a lot of musicians will start with classical, or they'll start with like a core capability. And it looks like you did, you know, you did Hamlet, you did Penelope. So is that something that you feel like as actors, is it always Shakespeare? Is it always the theater that you really, you know, get your bones in to really learn your craft first?
Honestly, I don't think it's a necessity, especially to be in film, but I do think it helps. Like, I think, you know, when I actually also teach acting at a small film school as well, and I say this to my students, I think that, you know, the more things that you can try and that you can work on, it will only better you as an actor. You know, it's like the diversity of projects, you know, you don't know your limits until you can test them, I think. And so for me personally, starting in theater, I loved theater, and growing up in Boston, we're so close to New York there, and theater is a thing. And also growing up as a dancer, theater was kind of, you know, the next logical step to really start to get into things. And then also in Boston, when I was growing up, there wasn't so much of the film industry as there is now. So it's like, if you wanted to act, you did theater, you did musicals, or you did A Christmas Carol, or you got into your community theater in your town, or whatever that was. And so for me, starting in theater, it was just something that I loved and still do love. You know, some of those kind of, you know, more complex things like Shakespeare, like you're mentioning, and Penelope, which was based on James Joyce's Ulysses. I think that it's a pretty cool challenge, because specifically Shakespeare, it's almost like learning a different language. And then once you know it, you know it, and you really enjoy it and can love working with it. And I think there's also something too for a lot of actors, like there are, you know, there's great roles out there. Like we've all heard Hamlet and Ophelia and Romeo and Juliet, and, you know, even some things that are like Blanche and Streetcar Named Desire, and you know, some of those big roles where it's
Death of a Salesman, like, that's kind of like my
Death of a Salesman, Fences, like these amazing plays that for years have been taught in schools. It's like, oh my gosh, it would be so cool if I could do that. And so when I did Hamlet, it definitely had that feeling, because I was lucky enough to play Ophelia in Hamlet at the Boston Center for the Arts. And it was just such a cool and unique challenge. And also it's kind of, you know, everyone knows what you're talking about when you say Hamlet. Everyone knows what you're talking about when you say Death of a Salesman. So there's always kind of that aspect to it as well. I think it's something that as an actor, when you do something like Shakespeare, you always keep it on your resume because it kind of has this recognition as well.
Yeah. Also, that when you're actually doing theater, I think it kind of relates to like when we're musicians, like compared to like if I work in studio work, right? Versus doing live work. Yeah. And it's the kind of that audience interaction compared to like television, unless you're on the live set or even film, because you're actually doing it. It's kind of like, it's not exactly improvisational, but you're feeding back with an audience. And I think, you know, with jazz musicians, blues musicians, you know, progressive, you know, I'm in a progressive kind of avant-garde musician. I like to kind of play off an audience, you know, go to New York and play a small club because you can feed off that audience. A musician, so I would think like an actor, it must be a different experience compared to doing TV and film to do theater and have that theater audience. Maybe talk about how that feels.
Wildly different experience. So first of all, in theater, it's like you rehearse for weeks ahead of time, and you know the whole play. You know the scenes. The scenes are all in order. As an actor, your character arc goes in order. You're living that world of that play for those 2 hours or whatever it is that the audience is in the house. Also, there's an energy there. Like if the house is full and really engaged, you can feel it when you're on stage. If it's a matinee and there's only, you know, 3 people in the audience, you can also feel that on stage. And I think you really have to be on your game. You know, there's no room for mess ups. There's no room or if you mess up, you have to know how to be able to cover for yourself. So that way it makes.
Yeah,
exactly. Rebound. Which I'm sure is kind of similar in music.
Yeah, rebound off the bad note. Then you kind of have to play.
Exactly. Or like if you mess up a line, like pick up the joke, which I think is part of the reason why, you know, another reason why Shakespeare is a little more difficult, because it's like you cannot flub a line in iambic pentameter unless you're like really good.
Well, it's like if you're playing Bach.
Yeah, exactly. There's not a lot of room. But I think, you know, it does, of course, it has its challenges because there's all of that preparation. And I think on the flip side, working on a film and being in a film set, you do have to kind of put in the same amount of preparation, but you don't have the audience to feed off of, but you do have the closeness of being with the other actor, with the other person. But then also I think the difficulties come in when, you know, the shooting schedule dictates that, you know, on day one of a 30-day shoot, you are doing the final scene of the movie and you've just met the actor that you're supposed to have been in love with this whole time or whatever the story says.
So you have to go from
0 to 60 as soon as they say action. And so I think it is, both skill sets are related, but at times, you know, they require different things. And I do think there is a pretty cool magic about film, whereas it's like once you have done something, and, you know, completed a scene or completed a film, it is captured forever and can be shared forever. Whereas in theater, if there's a really powerful moment on stage, kind of the magic from that is you have to have been in the room to witness it in that moment, because you can't go to Netflix and just turn it on. It's now or never. The kind of the magic of having to be there in the moment, but then also it's kind of a different magic to be able to watch something forever, I think.
Well, I'm wondering about, like, one of the things I was always interested in film is like the role of the editors and the directors, right? So you might do a take and then the editor like somehow totally radically changes the perspective of how that was actually done. And did you have to sometimes actually go back and reshoot based on editing and director choices to say, hey, I'm gonna change that because the editor says maybe it works better.
Yeah,
this
so
way.
there's a yeah, or, a few different things there. I think the first thing that a lot of people don't realize is how much power an editor can have in storytelling. Because even just little things that I think we don't realize as an audience, because we've just been so conditioned to watching TV or watching movies, it's the way something is edited dictates how we feel about it, how we feel about the story in that moment, how we feel about the character in that moment. So I think, you know, there's things like if you took a famous movie, if you took Sunset Boulevard and you changed the editing of it, you changed the music in the background, it would be an entirely different movie. And I think as far as reshoots and things, it is normal. Most films do have a type of pickup shots or reshoots after the principal photography. And I think, you know, once in a while, you know, the trades will release in the news, like the Avengers movie going into reshoots. And it's really not news because especially something of that size will kind of always have some type of reshoot because, you know, you have the script and you have the schedule of when you start shooting and maybe you get everything in the script. Maybe there's, it's such a team effort. It's such a collaborative effort film because it's like everyone on set is working to make this one piece of art. And so I think there's a few different reasons why it can happen. It can happen, you know, maybe there was a day where, you know, the shooting day had gone 12, 16 hours and they were rushing to get a scene and didn't get exactly what they needed. So they need to redo it. Or something that also can happen is when they put it, the editor and the director put things together, they can realize like, hey, I think we can make this storyline more clear if we add a scene about this. Or in the bigger picture, sometimes, you know, the bigger a movie is, the more people are involved in having say on the final cut. So when you're working with a studio, that is something that can also happen. Like,
well, yeah, and I guess people could be looking for continuity in what it's going on, and then they kind of say, hey, after you step back, it's like a musician that you step back from a composition. And you go back, you look at all the layers or all your tracks, and you say, well, you know what? Everybody should re-record this or change this, move it to the,
right,
you know, to the beginning of the song. Because this is actually like the core theme, and it's, like,
yeah, exactly,
it's at the wrong position. And so then you realize that what it actually would work better if you move it.
And yeah, very similar kind of thing. It's, yeah, the same thing can happen with film and with movies. It's like, you know, you've cut together a 2-hour movie and realize like, oh my gosh, you know, there could be one more scene about this and it would really make this powerful. Or it, on the flip side as well, like, oh, we don't need this, we don't need this, we don't need this, we understand what's going on, the movie's an hour and a half now, you know, like, so
the layers, a lot of times we go end up having so many layers in the sound, and we say, you know, we've made it too busy. Let's bring it down to like the core honesty, and then and try to like take things out to kind of make it mean more, or feel better by having get more.
Yeah,
space. You know, a lot of musicians sometimes we like cluttering things up because we think it's going to be impressive. Then we realize that the silences between the notes actually are more effective. So is that kind of like when you're an actor?
Yes.
You kind of think about your cadence and how you're actually saying something to kind of figure out, should you put a lot of words into it or kind of have the words mean more, or space things out, or use your expressions. And like I see a lot of times, I watch like a lot of classic movies, like a lot of film noir or like Hitchcock movies, or, you know, great filmmakers. And there's a lot of stuff that's not even spoken with acting. There's a lot of just like a look. You know, the way you look at the camera, the way you hold the cigarette, the way you do something, that seems to be actually more of the point than even like a lot of
I think you're right. And I think that it, what you're saying with music can so relate to acting, because I think there is so much that is nonverbal. It's funny, like, I feel like when you first start acting, and even especially in the theater world, you know, people kind of are like, oh my gosh, how do you learn all of those lines? And it's like, that's the bare minimum of the job is to know what the lines are. I think, you know, there's so much that can be communicated without the actual words. Cause I think, you know, so much of it is just all you're really like the core of acting is just being a real person. Like just going on screen, being a real person, going on stage, being a real person, or, you know, demon or Lord of the Rings elf or like whatever it dictates, but having, you know, a sense of groundedness and somewhere in that role, even if it's the biggest comedy. Part of the reason I think we relate to it is because you still believe it. And I think so much of that is like in human behavior, studying what people do and how they communicate with each other. And I think so much of what we do is how we say things and when we don't even need to speak to get a point across. And yeah, I think that's a big part of it.
So one thing I've always wondered as an actor is like, you got to be very aware of how you're kind of presenting yourself and then kind of model your character to like represent all these different like things that maybe people don't pay attention to. But as an actor,
yeah,
you're paying attention to that, right? So I guess I've heard of actors like watching people, you know, like learning from other, like especially like method actors actually going and learning how somebody behaves, right? And then actually kind of mimicking or parroting that. Like I heard like Johnny Depp hung out with Keith Richards to kind of bring a Keith Richards vibe to his character in Pirates of the Caribbean. He actually, you know, and then Keith kind of figured out why he was there. And he said, well, you know, and he's always that cool. And he's like, but he didn't really tell him up front that that's what he was doing. But it's interesting. So how do you get that kind of self-awareness to know how to present yourself or even know how you're actually getting carried, how it's carrying off? Like, how do you?
I think it's a bit of, you know, it takes training and trial and error, really. You know, I think there's so much that makes acting a unique job because you're always learning, you know, you're always expanding. It's not like a lot of, I mean, and I think a lot of other jobs are kind of like this too, but I feel like even more so, it's not like, oh, you go and get a degree in acting and you're done. Like that's not the way it works. And it also is a unique job in the way that, you know, that doesn't guarantee you any employment in the future. I think so much of it is just, especially, you know, and in both theater and film is becoming comfortable with who you are, and having a strong sense of self in the way that who you are and how you operate in the world, for a few reasons. One being, you know, if you're sure of yourself, it's a little easier to kind of understand why other people do what they do or why a certain character would do what they do. Also, I think it's really important to understand story. To understand, you know, your position in the story and how you are serving the story. You know, there is a different answer to that depending on what role you're playing. You know, if you're, for example, if you're in Star Wars, if you're Luke Skywalker, you obviously are, a lot of the story, it revolves around you. But if you are, you know, a stormtrooper that has three lines, it is not about you. The story is not about you. You're there to give the information to further the story along. And I think kind of understanding story along with understanding human behavior is a huge part of it, because I think you can do all of the character research and the, you know, method types of preparation you want. But if you don't understand how you fit into the story, I think that you could be doing yourself a disservice. And I think also it is important to have a strong sense of self just in the professional aspect, because I think that, you know, there it's pretty well known that it's a career that has a lot of rejection. And I think it's really important for all actors, but especially young or newer actors, to understand that sometimes, a lot of the time, you know, when you're trained and you've been doing your work and you're in class and you're prepared for things, you know, when you're rejected, it's not about your talent or about how good you are. It's about that you weren't right for that particular character. And in some of the films I've worked on, it, you know, it's like taken me, it took years to really understand how that works. And I think having a sense of self is important because, you know, when you're going into the room, you're presenting your take on the character. And I think a lot of, you know, greener, newer actors can think that they're presenting themselves and when they get rejected that they're not good enough. But usually that's not the case. It's, you know, it's a multitude of things. It's that, hey, so-and-so was better for the character. And even that sounds kind of like, oh, well, that means I wasn't good enough. It's like, oh no, you know, the leading man is 6'5". So we need the leading lady to be at least 5'9". So he doesn't look like a giant, or like, you know, like all kinds of crazy things that you don't even think of, that can play into it. Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. You happen to look like the director's ex-boyfriend, so she can't work with you, you know, or whatever it is.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that probably serve the role, like serving the song, you know, when you work with, you know, Steely Dan was kind of like a famous band that actually auditioned probably kind of like a film. It's like they used to bring in tons of musicians. They weren't like a set band. They had two guys that were the set guys, and then the rest of the band was kind of flowing in and out. And whatever song Donald Fagen and Walter Becker felt like the right musician would fit, and they would like record multiple versions of songs with multiple bands. And it was like not that
right.
That
yeah, exactly. I think that reminds me of, it made me think of Queen and how they work with Adam Lambert now. And I think that, you know, sure, Freddie Mercury is a legend, but I think there were probably other people that could hit the notes, right? You know, there were other people that could sing the songs, but there's also, he had the attitude to bring to it, which was like something similar to what Freddie used to have, which is why I'm sure that they decided to start working with him. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not in the band. I don't know. But like...
I saw a documentary where they kind of talked about technically, they could have got guys that were they actually had the Bad Company guy for a little while. But Adam actually worked better because even though technically maybe the lead singer of Bad Company is maybe technically a more dynamic well-known singer and has a pedigree from Bad Company, right? But Adam had passion and he just had something that just fit where they were, where Queen was like right now. And this documentary was really interesting. They were all like, Brian May was like, he actually got it.
Yeah.
He made us want to do it. And like, and when you get a guy like Brian May, the original guys in the band, it's like, he made them want to be Queen again. And so I think that's kind of core, is like the chemistry in a band. It makes you want to take a band that could be done and then say you want to do it again after the tragedy they went through. I think that's really said something about
I think that crosses over to both film and theater. It's so much of it is collaborative and how everyone fits together like a puzzle and how it fits into the pieces to serve the story. And so it's kind of like a bit of harmony when it works out.
Yeah, it seems like a film is kind of like when you have a band, like you think about the Beatles or you think about Pink Floyd. Every great band at certain key points, at their zenith or their height, everybody's like in tune. Or everybody is maybe creatively bringing friction that creates great capability. So, you know, the Beatles were always kind of falling apart. Pink Floyd was always kind of having a problem. They were always kind of fighting, but they're fighting created great art. And so I think it's that kind of polarity of sometimes if you're pulling together or you're pulling apart, But in that can of creative chaos, in music, we find it a lot. Mm-hmm. There's sometimes like very polar opposites when you're collaborating can create great
I
work
think that's
that
so much of it. It's
yourself.
Like it is something you couldn't do by yourself, even theater as well. I mean, I think, you know, there are one woman shows and things like that, but it's a collaborative effort, I think, you know, even if it's just you and the audience collaborating in a theater scenario, you know, there's still something there that lends to the performance and how it all turns out and how people feel when it's all over.
Is there any kind of director that you like love to work with, and then another kind of director that you don't?
Yeah,
and I don't know if you want to talk about that because we cannot, you know, we cut down your chances. But you did just kind of just talking. Like, is there a certain style of directing that you like?
Yeah, I think for me personally, I'm pretty open, especially because I do other things besides acting, and I think that is important to be a well-rounded actor, to understand the language of what's happening behind the camera, or also what's happening backstage when you're in a theater, to understand how all of the jobs fit together to create the final product. So in a director, I do like, I like when someone asks for my feedback. But I do also like if someone just tells me what they want and then I do it. You know, I think it varies on the project of what makes sense for the project, to get the final product that the director is ultimately looking for. I do enjoy being a part of the collaborative process because I think, you know, that's fun. It's fun to create things. It's fun to make stories, but I think, you know, even if it depending on my role at any given time, you know, sometimes if you're the lead in the film, you do have a little bit more room to collaborate with everything that's going on. But if you're a smaller part, it's kind of, you know, I always appreciate when someone, you know, checks in, and even on a film set, like it's, I think, just important for everyone, director all the way down to PA, just to be kind. And you know, I think it's a small thing, but it's easy for some people to miss. And I think we all understand sometimes, you know, there's stressful situations and things are going on, but that's one thing I personally always try to remember, like no matter what I'm going through, like it's just as easy for me to be kind to someone as it is to not.
I think that's very important in all art, because you have some people in, like, even in music,
right
you have like some guys who are like leaders of a band, right, or the producer that makes you do 182 takes versus the producer that kind of like lets you kind of take it and then, you know, comes in and, you know, kind of gently says, well, maybe you try it in D, you know, do it in a different way, use a different chromatic chart, but kind of like said, well, you know, well, that's cool, but we could do it.
Yeah.
Instead of a guy saying, well, that's total.
Yeah.
You know, because they, like, negative reinforcement can work, or kind of overdoing it and you're editing. It's like when you're a kid,
yes.
The English teacher puts red marks all over your paper. Versus somebody who knows how to be a little more diplomatic.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are people who really know what they want.
Yeah.
And they're very directed. And they kind of will, like,
I think,
they hear,
oh my gosh, you say 182 takes, and I'm thinking of that in the film sense, and I'm like, oh my God, 182 takes.
Well, there are some like producers that will make a drummer.
That's crazy.
Do a drum part that many times. You know, they'll make the bass player go back and redo.
Really?
Yeah.
And I think,
like, really?
I think in that aspect, it's kind of like, okay, so what am I not doing that you're looking for? You know, as an actor, if I were, you know, I feel like there's famous stories about Stanley Kubrick doing things like that, like on The Shining, doing 100 takes of a certain scene to get Shelley Long to really lose it and be crazy. And I think that sometimes it's like, I think the only thing I don't appreciate in a director is someone that's actually trying to actively hurt or torture the human being to get an authentic reaction. You know, it's like,
Or to kind of stress you to
yeah,
take
and
the
it's
stressed
like, hey,
response that they're actually
we're
looking for.
actors, we're trained. Like, I can make you believe that I'm stressed. Like, you don't have to
You don't have to
hurt us.
put me in
Yeah.
a stress position to yeah. We're kind of like the idea of becoming a method actor
Yeah.
and actually losing, like in Raging Bull, getting to fighting shape and then
Yeah,
going
yeah.
and
And I
getting
think,
out of fighting shape.
yeah,
Some
yeah. And
people
I
feel
think,
like
you
they
know,
have
I
to go
think
that
different
far,
roles dictate different types of preparation. But yeah, I think, you know, that would be the only thing that I really, as an actor, wouldn't appreciate. Like, hey, like, you know, I can make it happen. I can do what you need, but like, you don't have to try to trick me into doing it kind of thing.
I think that's kind of like, to get somebody angry, and there are famous like situations in music where people have wanted to kind of force like a situation
Yes, yeah.
to get a performance out of somebody. And sometimes they were doing things that, in the 70s and the 60s, they put
Yeah.
you into situations that were kind of like very unhealthy, like behaviors, because somehow when you're in that state, you actually gave them what they wanted, but it's actually not good for you to be in that state. But then
Right.
it's like, well, I need that to get this, and
Right.
then you have to make a
Yeah.
decision. It's like, are you willing to go
Yeah,
that far,
very similar situation.
to do
Yeah, I
that?
think, yeah, beyond that, as far as working with the directors, like I'm pretty flexible as far as style. Like I like learning from everyone I work with. So, you know, pretty open.
So in this COVID age, when I was talking to Jeff Davis, she was talking about like how in New York they've got these kind of COVID kind of
Yes.
regulations and actually filming, and they're doing work, but the sets don't have
Yeah.
anywhere near the amount of extras or people on the set. Like COVID dense, or people have been kind of staying in a quarantine, so then they can actually work because they know they don't have it, and they've been kind
Right.
of set up in this kind of cocoon. And then they can work.
Similar, yeah,
Is that kind of
I've
what's
been
going
on
on?
set a few times since quarantine, and a lot of the regulations are requiring testing beforehand, making sure that, you know, social distancing is happening wherever possible, making sure that everyone has on a mask and sometimes a face shield as well at all times, unless they're actively, you know, at lunch or an actor in the scene. Like even a thing I was working on yesterday, it was like the moment that we called cut, it was like masks on until we are ready to roll again. And I think personally, I think I appreciate that. I appreciate that we are all able to work safely and also continue creating. So it is a little bit different than it used to be, but I think it's coinciding with our different daily lives, you know, like our daily huh?
Well, it seems it's
Yeah.
interesting that you guys were able to find a way to work, because I initially
Yeah.
thought it's like, well, you're not going to be able to work at all. And like a lot of musicians actually have had a problem where a lot of bands actually haven't been able to work because they haven't been able to figure out how to do that. In the COVID regulation kind of situation, and a lot of drummers haven't been able to actually, be with their band in the same room, and it's been hard where people are just like remotely phoning it in. And then they're finding that's very difficult to kind of
Yeah.
get the magic that they normally do together. And it's interesting that you guys are, as a
Yeah, I
collaborative
mean, it
process,
is
have found a
different for
way to
sure. I mean,
work.
it's like, you know, almost every audition now is over Zoom or over a video, whereas before you would go in person. And generally, until the day on set, you're not meeting anyone beforehand, where in the past there may have been a rehearsal or a callback or a costume fitting or something like that, whereas now they're really minimizing any in-person contact. But yeah, I too am super thankful, because when it first started here in LA, like film all shut down for about 3 months there until they could kind of, the unions could work together and figure out the protocols. All the unions a little bit worked. The city had their own protocols, and then the unions came up with what they thought, it seems like what they thought would be safe and would allow everyone to go back to work. And so now when you're on a set, it's kind of a combination of all of those rules, which luckily really do work well together.
Yeah, I think the musicians probably could learn from that, because the kind of thing which kind of messed up musicians is, since the studio systems have kind of fallen apart for us, and a lot of us are kind of indie, mm-hmm. we don't have the kind of studio structures that we used to have in the height of like Motown and the height of the big studio systems, where, you know, all the session musicians probably could have had like a way to set it up. But now everything is so different that people don't seem to have a set standard. And so it's making it harder.
Yeah, I could understand that. I think honestly, it would be the same here. Like if every studio had different rules, it would be a little more difficult to get things going, because we wouldn't all be on the same page.
But we're all finding different ways to do things. I'm doing tons of like internet collaborations, where somebody does something in their own studio and then they send it to me and I work it in my studio, send it back, do a Zoom meeting, you know, listen to the tracks, kind of figure out stuff. So we're all doing a lot of collaborations, you know, with each other in different countries. And that is kind of cool, because we're opening up who we work with. You know, I can work with somebody in Berlin. I can work somebody in Paris.
That's really cool.
I can work somebody in New York. It doesn't really matter. So there's a lot of stuff we figured out how to do, new types of things. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's kind of cool. But it's interesting. How the world has changed. And one of the things we deal with as musicians is like streaming services.
Yeah.
And you know, you have Netflix and Hulu and Amazon. How does that affect an actor now that you got so many, you know, these companies like Netflix and Amazon and Hulu creating shows on these like streaming networks?
There's pros and cons, because all of those networks do have their own content, which means there's more opportunities, there's more things to be in. But on the flip side, the pay scale is a little bit different. So, you know, it used to be back, you know, in network TV days, you would book a role on Friends, and every time Friends played on NBC, you got paid. And then also when it got sold off and is on TBS 24 hours a day, you get paid every time your episode airs. Yeah.
Oh yeah, the reruns.
Yeah, so it's like it's a complicated thing that honestly, like, the unions are still kind of figuring out and negotiating to work on those contracts. But it's kind of across the board. I know I've talked to some writer friends of mine that are kind of in a similar boat. Like, they used to also get a residual if something were to play on TV, but now when it's streaming, it's kind of, I think, still figuring out how all of that stuff is calculated. So I think in that way, it's still a little complex. But on the bright side of with creativity, just because there are so many shows and so many movies now, so much more than there. Yeah, there's a lot more work out there, which I think is pretty cool. And also a lot more diversity in the work as well. Whereas, like, you know, back in, I don't know, the 50s and 60s, it was, you had three television channels or in the movies, and that was it. And now it's like endless television channels, endless movies, endless places to watch them, because it's like there's Netflix and there's Hulu, but then there's also the ones you haven't even heard of. Like, you know, I can't even think of them right now, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of new ones. The one thing I noticed is it seems like sometimes these, like the Netflix and the Amazons might give a show more than three shows before they cancel it. Like they actually might let it go like 10 or 12, where the network might drop something after two or three if they don't.
It seems now that something will at least get a season, which also now is much shorter. So back 15 years ago, a season of a show had 22 episodes. Like Lost, which is something I rewatched during quarantine. Every episode, every season has like 22 episodes and they're an hour long. So it's like, that's 23 hours in a season. And now, new show could have as little as 6 or 8 episodes per season. And so it is a little bit different in the model and the way things are created. But I think I would agree with that just from, things that I've seen. It seems that some of the streaming services will give something kind of a whole season to test it out, as opposed to what the networks used to do, which would be canceling something mid-season.
It's kind of like why a lot of bands have gone indie, because like if you go with a label, right, and you don't get after like the first or second album, you get dropped. But if you're indie and you figure out how to kind of target an audience and tour, you could have indie bands staying around for like 10 years or not even dissolving and be able to actually work at a micro level where maybe you just have 70,000 fans, but you actually can target that market stay alive as a band. And so that kind of is like, so you don't have to hit 500,000 fans, and you can still do what you love to do and tour like all over the place.
I can totally agree with that. Can I put you on hold for just 1 second? All right, great. Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Had to take a...
Hi. Okay, we're actually kind of near the end of our time, but I wanted to ask you about what you're working on for 2021 and maybe what's like your fans...
Something I'm currently working on is my podcast. So my podcast is called Yeah, I've Seen That. And it's a short comedy podcast about movies. So basically what we do is every episode, it's me and my boyfriend, who's a writer-director. We are co-hosts. And we pick a famous movie that we haven't seen. And we just kind of bullshit the plot and tell you what we think it's about. it's an audio podcast.
Is it like a video podcast or audio?
That has been ongoing and it's been really, really fun and silly. Just like famous things that I've hadn't seen that I would just be like, I think, this is the story of Goodfellas, or like, this is the story of Waterworld. This is the story of The Notebook, big movies like that, which have been really, it's been fun and silly and also really great quarantine activity that's been ongoing. And so that's been really fun.
Well, send me the link. Yeah, send me the link to that and I'll put it on this podcast.
Oh, awesome. Thank you for that. Yeah, so there's been that. And then also kind of in pre-production for a feature film that I'm working on that is a kind of I'd say it's like a suspense horror film that we're hoping to shoot in quarantine, and
Cool.
really, really excited about that one because it'll be fun. I don't think I can share too much about it, except there's a little bit of witchiness going on. So
Yes.
I'm ex
Is that going to go
To be
direct to
honest,
like
I'm
all
not
the
sure
services or going to go
yet,
to theaters?
especially with everything going on with quarantine. I don't know. I don't know. We'll see. Yes.
Yeah, a lot of things have been going right to video or right to like
Right. Yeah. Like
HBO
even the new
Max and
Wonder
stuff.
Woman
They've just
movie
been
just
going
went
right to
straight
it.
to
But
streaming. So, yeah, to be honest, with the future for that, and some of the other projects that I shot last year that were supposed to come out in theaters, I'm not sure where they'll wind up, because everything's kind of changing with our new world. So, but I will definitely be posting all about that. I share everything on my Instagram, which is Leanne O'Shea Official, which is how we found each other. So, thanks.
I'll post that. I'm going to
Yeah.
push that link, but if you can send me the link to your podcast like directly, because this is actually going to
Oh
get
wow, so
published within the next half hour after we stop. So it's not that, it doesn't take that long. So we will go out onto 11 podcast platforms, including Spotify, which we actually are part of, and Apple and Google and Radio Public. So it automatically gets published
Okay,
to
great.
11 podcast platforms once I hit the button to push it. But if you can send me any hyperlink you think would be useful to let your fans know about, it's been
Sure.
specific, your podcast and any other thing that you
Great.
want,
Thank you so
I can
much.
attach
When we
to the
have our
program.
next recording, I'll be sure to plug your podcast as well, because this has been so fun and so nice. So thank you for inviting me to be on.
Well, we love to talk to all types of creative folks. We've been expanding our podcast to talk to, painters, musicians, actors, directors. So we've been opening it up to a larger group.
Cool.
We're hoping to do a video podcast version of our show, and we're gaining traction. We
That's
started at like
great.
maybe 1,000 listeners. Now we're at 30,000. So we're pretty psyched about our growth so far. So we're hoping to hit 50,000 this year. That's our goal, or more. So thank you for listening, and thank you for being on the podcast. And hopefully we'll be able to help you with your promotion on your movie when it comes out. We
Oh,
always ask
thanks.
people to
Yeah, I
come
would
back
love to come
on
back
if they
anytime.
got something they want to push. That's great. So thank you for being on the show, Leanne O'Shea. Everybody, check out the links we're going to put on this show, and within the next, you'll see it within a half hour. But my fans will check, and we will push it on our podcast, on our channels, our Instagram and Facebook. We will push this episode, which actually on the Spotify version, we actually have integration with Instagram, and the highlight on
So cool. Well,
Instagram will go
thank you so
directly to
much.
the
It's been
Spotify
an
version of the
absolute
podcast.
pleasure speaking with you. And I'll be sure to share everywhere the podcast, and hopefully, get you to those 50,000 listeners this year. Yeah, thank you so much. Bye.
Thank you.